This is Mike Mudnansky, Ken Laird, and Chris Curtis. Mike, Ken, and Curtis on Sports Radio WEEI.
Monday morning, Curtis will be back from Hawaii. Mutt will be back from North Chelmsford. And they'll both give us a full recap of the vacation.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, New England.
How was my vacation? How do I want to say that? A great, great vacation. Great stuff happened in the last 10 days or so.
Oh, nice story.
Great stories. North Chelmsford.
In-N-Out Burger?
I was in Drake's Island, Maine for a week. Got out of North Chelmsford for a couple of days. Once I was allowed to leave North Chelmsford, thanks to the state of Massachusetts.
Your Instagram was on fire. Boy, you had some game that looked like dominoes,
right,
or a combination of gin rummy and
dominoes. The game is called Rummy Cubed.
What was the
game?
Cat
is called Rummy Cubed. Go ahead.
Rummy Cubed?
Rummy Cubed is the name of the game, yes.
Okay.
Playing up in Maine. We play
a picture of that.
On a family vacation, Ken, it was the most, except for a couple different pieces of the week, it was the most normal, basic storybook family vacation. You go to the beach, you play golf, you play cards with your family, you drink too much and get yelled at by your mom, and that's what it was for a week up in Maine. And that cat book was at a restaurant we were at, and I just thought, that's a funny book. I just thought, it's a cookbook for cats.
Why is it?
I had no clue.
Nobody understood it. It was in reference to the.
Was it an inside joke?
The Dr. Seuss book that you got?
No, I've never seen a cookbook for cats, Ken. It looked very serious.
I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of cookbooks for cats. Right. There's cookbooks for everything.
I'm 39 years old, Curtis. I've never seen a cookbook for cats.
I have three.
You've never seen one.
This doesn't exist on our headphones.
What is wrong with your headphones? You've done this
before.
You
come back, someone took the headphones out of my office, and now I'm on backup headphones, and neither of them work. So we'll put these on.
We're getting new ones right now. They're
oh, good.
Yes.
Oh, are they going to say Mutt and Callahan, on the side with me
and a vest?
We
just ordered 500. They're ready
somewhere?
To go. Yes.
I wish I had I guess I do now officially. Don't we all have a good vacation story? Ken was here for this on Friday, but now we all sort of have a fun vacation story. My vacation started last Friday, finally hearing from the state of Massachusetts saying my license was suspended.
No way.
And it ended on the following Friday with a call at 10:54. Thank you, Lucy. From Joe Zarbano saying, hey, can you talk for a couple minutes? So that was the bookend to my vacation.
Hold it.
The most awkward vacation you can possibly have, I just had for 7 days in Maine.
So
that is a lock.
Let's start here. I don't want to bury this lead. So you heard from state of Massachusetts regarding your suspended
license.
And I agree. This is the lead. It's as big as Jerry is.
Well, I think we can talk about this now. There's nothing else going on today to get to.
Do you think Jerry wants to hear about himself or you getting your license suspended? I mean, come on.
There was the incident. Good morning. This is the Mutt, Ken, and Curtis show.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Happy Monday morning. Time and temperature. Thursday morning, a tremendous 4th of July. Got out, parade in Chelmsford, ran my first road race, tremendous, feeling good. Wife got the bouncy house with the slide, which was also on Instagram.
Top
you can get credit
show
for that.
Yeah, that was good.
Tremendous. And so Friday afternoon,
$300.
It was well worth it. Grass looks fine. We're breaking that thing down, and the mail guy comes. And I've been waiting to hear about this because I guess you can say I got lucky the first time around and that I was part of this group in the Mass RMV that got thrown into a bucket in Quincy and someone did not want to deal with it. So I was arrested, obviously, a couple summers ago in upstate New York, but had never quite heard from the state of Massachusetts the last couple of years. That changed with a priority letter to my house directly Friday morning at 11:30 in a big envelope, my name on it. Open it up. Your license is suspended immediately for a year.
Holy cow.
Immediately for a year.
Now, do you blame Curtis and I for bringing it up on the show? That was an awkward discussion.
So where
on the
did
show.
You drive once you got that letter?
I did not drive anywhere. The plan was take two cars to Maine. We took one.
Yep.
And so you have to show up at a family vacation with two cousins, both their kids, all my mom's family. She has four other brothers and sisters. They're all there. By the way, they pay for this house for us to go. They don't make us pay a cent. So I'm there on their dime. And the first question is, oh, you guys only took one car this year.
Oh, baby.
And you have to explain to your whole family
your
at that point what is going on right now. So that lasted for a couple
of
days.
I'm thrilled, man. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Why do you respect Texas so much?
This explains the erratic Instagram, by the way, but go ahead.
Yes, because it was not really that celebratory. Things were good up until 4th of July, right? There's road race videos, there's pictures, you're feeling good, and then the state of Mass comes calling, and it's going to be suspended for a year.
Talk about a buzzkill. You get that letter after the 4th of July. That's big drinking weekend. That's a party time.
We still able to do some partying, but I couldn't drive, so they had
win-win.
So Jess was able to drive for a couple
right.
days.
Mm-hmm.
Had to have my father drive me to Boston all day on Tuesday.
Oh.
And finally can say with confidence, I have put that arrest of 2017 behind me. I am today okay with the state. Like many people are finding out that they got their letters and there's a process you go through. But I can officially say that is behind me and I can drive going forward. So the congratulations to me. So
wait a minute. How did that happen? It was suspended for a year.
Well, because I don't want to get into the details of it, but they kind of sent it a little late, Kevin.
They messed with the sample?
You know, this is why we're having breakfast with Baker going forward.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that, Mr. I have a lot of thoughts. I think the RMV's not your issue. Erin Devaney, it's all her fault, Governor. It's all her fault. We'll take your calls on that coming up.
I love Governor Baker. He does a great job.
Tremendous.
So that was the big story before Friday morning. Then Friday morning at 10:54, probably about an hour after you found out, I got the call saying that there were going to be some changes here at the station. So
got
that serves a pretty
whom?
Good. Joe Zarbano called and said, "Do you have a couple of minutes?" And I was actually on the mini golf course. And said, "Can I call you back?" So I called him back 5-6 minutes later, and he said, "No, Mark is in the office. Mark Hannon, our big boss." And so initially, when you hear, Joe, can you talk for a couple minutes? Okay, fine. When Mark is in the office, something else is going on. And so I put the kids at a picnic table with an iPad and said, Daddy's got to have this phone call for a few minutes, and was told what was going to happen, that Jerry was not going to be back. And as a part of that, I was not going to be part of the morning show anymore, and that they're going to make some changes. And Greg and Danielle were going to be coming over and doing the morning show here. And that started the rest of the second part of my vacation weekend. So that was my vacation story, Chris. Would that live up to a Jerry Callahan standard for a vacation story?
You wait for him to be gone to give a good vacation story. Maybe he was the problem all along.
Went to a bar, suspended. Played cards.
I mean, how can you top that? Unbelievable. He went to Vermont and played cards.
All right, Curtis, you're up. That's tough to top. Now, Curtis was in Hawaii.
Good luck, Chris. Came home.
By the way, just recapping, I know this is Jerry's last request. He wanted vacation stories.
Yeah, so we're starting
from
here.
Mutt and Curtis.
Right, so here we go. Hawaii, phenomenal place. One downside, really far away. The flight out there was a debacle. Even in first class, believe me, we suffer too.
Jesus.
The most Curtis thing he's ever said, even in first class. Go ahead.
So we get, it was
direct flight?
No, we threw to Detroit, which was everything I hoped and dreamed it would be. It was spectacular. Great, great airport. Walked around there, relived the old days of sitting there with Kevin Graham, John Dennis, Kirk Minahan, and Jerry Callahan, waiting for our flight. That was
you were hammered on that flight, right?
Oh, my God. That was a win-win. There was a two-hour layover. It's like, oh, I got to go grab some food. And they all sat there right to the bar, pounded about 10. It was phenomenal. So anyway, this time I did not do that, but we get there. The flight from Detroit to Oahu, Honolulu, was 9 hours and 45 minutes of flying time.
Ooh.
Brutal.
Just shy of the Sox game last night.
I went up. I literally thought we were about like 90 minutes left in the flight. I go up to the area around the cockpit where the flight attendants were, and I said, how much longer till we get into Honolulu? And they go, 6 hours and 5 minutes. I was like, oh, God, I've already gone through 4 office episodes. I'm totally done.
You could have listened to Jerry's Craigslist story at that time.
I know.
Got that in just under the,
exactly.
Which, by the way, will be played in its entirety coming up later today.
Yeah, I'm looking at a list here of Jerry's stories, because Jerry tells excellent stories, and he wants us to tell excellent stories. So we're going to hear some of Jerry's best stories. So that's your The flight was bad.
That's my story. And Jesus. I flew back. This is sort of missing the big part, but I flew back with the head coach of Navy football, Ken Niumatamalolo, whatever the guy's name is. It was very exciting.
Oh, I like that guy.
Yeah, he's great. He sat right next to me.
You talked about Belichick taking Navy players over the years, Academy guys, no?
I said, Joe Cardona, what do you think? He said, he's a great guy. I said, here we go.
He had the Super Bowl trophy more than anybody did that day at Fenway Park.
That's true. So my Friday morning, I had my phone off. That was my thing. Turned my phone off every time I went to bed because I didn't want to be woken up. The show was on when I was sleeping. I could not listen live because it went on the air at midnight local time. So I get up, turn my phone on, just sort of looking outside. Spectacular day. Kauai was awesome. And I get a text from John Tomasi that pops up on my phone. I'm like, Tomasi, what does he want? Whatever. So I open it. Curtis, hey, man, really sucks what happened at the station today. I hope they value and understand what they have in you and Ken. And I'm going, what in the hell could this possibly mean? Are we doing country music? You see that on social media. I'm like, has there been a station
flip? I know Glenn reported
that
weeks ago, yeah.
So I just open up,
on Glenn, yeah.
I open up my laptop and I just Google WEEI because I'm like, okay, there's got to be some news story about WEEI. Nothing. It was just, just WEEI. The Twitter account pops up, a couple other things, and audio on demand. I was like, okay. So I open up Twitter and I see Jerry's tweet. And for the first time ever, John Tomasi got a big story right. And it had to do with the demise of this morning show that I was so happy to be a part of. And I was then numb for the rest of the day. It was a surreal, just bad dream feeling, I talked to everybody that day. And everybody I talked to, we had this sort of like malaise about our conversation. It was like everything we had worked for was gone. Our entire futures were sort of in doubt. And none of it made any sense. And I remember I was just sitting there and I talked to Jerry and finally got a hold of him. And he was, I'm sure, you know, busy talking to a million different people. He called and, you know, we just talked about the show and sort of looked back on what we did together and the great times that we had and all that. And we hung up the phone and I walk around the corner and I start talking to my wife and I break down like a child, like a baby.
Oh,
and
like
start,
Keith.
Oh, my God. It was tear central. I was just like, I'm never working with him again. My idol, my hero. I was sitting there. I was like, you know, blubbering, talking about, you know, our shows
and
in DC.
A blast.
And I'm, and finally, I look outside. It's 85 degrees and sunny. I'm like, all right, I got to get it together. And that night.
And Jerry called you the P word on Twitter.
Right.
Shortly
I tweet out this thing. By the way, that was a perfect tweet. Every character was used. It was exactly what I wanted
you
to
nailed
encapsulate.
It, buddy. Congratulations.
Better than Bud, who did like a string of like
oh,
eight
God.
Tweets.
I was not drunk. I took an hour to make sure I spelled everything right. I copied all these different tweets. And I did. I know.
Honesty.
I still screwed it up. Honesty instead of honesty.
Lucy is going to read those in dramatic form later in the show.
I hope Mutt's so. Tweets. Those were good. Those were heartfelt. And
the thread was good,
too.
But the thread,
what did I say in our last show together? I said I would write you a shorter letter if I had more time.
It deserved more than one tweet.
No, so
one crappy tweet.
That night, so we go out and Captain Andy's great catamaran, only $200 ahead.
Captain Andy.
We're going around the Nepali coast.
Chris, for a scuba?
No scuba. And
after your massage.
After the massage, we get on this beautiful catamaran. I'm going around and like, I kid you not, every 30 seconds they're passing around rum punch and all this stuff. And it was my greatest accomplishment as a human, bringing the Jerry Callahan exodus from this company back to me like everybody else has.
Yeah.
I did not have a cocktail on a happy hour boat on my worst day of my professional life when Jerry Callahan departed. So,
Jerry would have wanted you to drink, probably.
Oh, my God. He was texting me pictures from the encore saying, you're missing out on this.
Hey, P-word, why don't you drink once?
I know.
You can handle it.
So, yes, that was a incredibly surreal, bizarre day that I still don't understand.
So, you and I got the
line because Curtis is upper management. He knew this was in the works for weeks, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're finding out a lot of people knew, Ken. Based on the phone calls I had, a lot of people knew about this for certainly longer than days and into the week. So, we both got it on the phone. We'll get to the bigger picture stuff and celebrate Jerry. You were here front and center for this.
Yeah.
You did the show. A show Reamer said was a great show. Like, I didn't hear it, but Reamer's saying it was a great show. So you have a great show on Friday with Dickerson and Reamer.
A lot of Rapino.
And so 10 o'clock.
As Jerry would have wanted, going out talking women's soccer.
Yes. What else are you going to talk about last week?
Yeah.
So 10 o'clock. What happens at 10 o'clock?
Well, after the show, Reamer and Lucy and I were in the back office. Jerry got called into a meeting, and I didn't think anything of it. That often happens.
He's had a couple of, admittedly, yeah. He's had some of those recently. He met with the big boss. He met with Joe Zarbato, our program director, multiple times because we knew, I didn't know a lot of the details of it, but his contract was up, and he was in a negotiation to get his new deal. But go ahead.
Yeah. So Jerry, probably about a half hour later, came back with Zarbato, our boss, and Reamer was in there and was asked to leave. And Jerry said, I need a box. And it was an awkward silence, and the door closed, and we had a very quick meeting. Jerry was looking around the office. I don't have anything here. I never moved anything over from the old place. So he really took nothing with him. I mean, he just briefly it was discussed, you know, whether he wanted to come in and do the show Monday. He really did not care to, nor did he think the company really wanted him to. And, you know, I can certainly understand that. In fact, we discussed this over the weekend, whether even the three of us wanted to do this show.
Up until Saturday, we're sure we're going to do it. They offer us the chance to do it. And Jerry deserves a better send-off than he got on Friday, in my opinion. But go ahead.
And at that point, he was, you know, he just wanted to leave. I mean, I can understand that. it was totally sickening feeling from my point of view. Of course, we had the big encore outing
pictures
later
look good.
That night.
Wiggy and Jerry wearing the same shirt?
Basically, yeah.
Looks similar.
Well, I don't know if you heard this. Wiggy said this, I think, 62 times from Friday through Sunday when he was on the air, both with Glenn and with Alex and Rob. Jerry was Archie Bunker to Wiggy, and Wiggy was Jerry's George Jefferson. So, write that
one down.
Good line.
Good line the first time,
at least. I mean, the 15th, it kind of lost a little steam.
But what I got to love about Wiggy, of course, we're entertained by Bob DeSalvio and his lovely wife Francine
Bob's
and Encore.
The best,
they rolled out the red carpet. You were supposed to be there. The
I
only
was,
reason
was
I got
vacation,
to go because you turned down the invite because you're on vacation. I think you should have came back from Maine for the event, but that's fine. That's your choice.
He had no license.
True. I
really
didn't
up until Tuesday, but go ahead.
So I'm there, and Wiggy's there with his lovely wife, and Jerry, by the way, gets a flat tire on the way to Encore. He still wanted to come, though. He was very excited about the boxing. He was actually in a great mood. I mean, I think this speaks to Jerry. I mean, he knows the business so well. It's like nothing surprises him at this point. I'm sure this surprised him, unless saying it didn't. But the guy's a talent. He's going to end up somewhere, and he's going to be doing great things. We'll talk more about Jerry coming up. But anyway, he gets a flat tire. So he's like 45 minutes late. He had to call AAA to get it, but he comes in. He's in a good mood. Lenny Clark's there telling jokes. We have an unbelievable meal. Wiggy is actually great in those situations. I am terrible. I probably said less than at the Casey Smith, the famous Casey Smith outing at the
Manhattan Johnny restaurant. Manziel was the hottest topic in the entire Border Cafe that
jug
night.
Dish.
Right. I mean, I just, it's awkward. I feel bad for Jerry. I feel bad for myself. Like, you're like wallowing in self-pity. But Wiggy's awesome. He's just telling stories. You know, he keeps it light.
He's texting Greg Hill every 5 minutes. Hey, Greg, what's going on? Always loved your show.
Totally. He and Reamer, full court press on the Hill, man. That is well underway. But after the meal, which was capped off by chocolate cigars, as you saw in the photo.
It looked awesome.
We had a seafood tower. Jerry ordered the seafood tower.
My
we
God.
Dug into that.
Jerry's favorite thing.
Yep. T-bone steak at the New York bone-in steak.
Did you drink?
Steak.
Have a couple cocktails? A
couple cocktails, yep.
Old-fashioned? That's one of your go-tos.
I did have an old-fashioned.
Yeah, I know my guy.
It's a good call. I tried to tone it down from the trip to Connecticut because that didn't work well with trending the day after.
You vomited on the air, yeah.
Did not, but it came close. But anyways, we had live boxing afterwards, as I told on the pre-show. Jerry was so into the boxing. We had front row seats. It was an awesome event. Jerry is more of a boxing talker than he is a movie talker.
That doesn't seem possible.
Just like throughout the, we had 12, the final fight was a great fight. Went 12 rounds with this kid from Stoneham. He beat the New York fighter, and it goes to decision. But through increasingly, as you got through the rounds, Jerry was even more into it. The scorecards were out, and he's got him on the ropes. He's got to finish him. Awesome event with Jerry there, and I kid you not, they played My Way by Sinatra on the way out as Jerry's like walking off into the sunset. It was totally surreal.
Dr. Jerry Punch Callahan breaking down the fight.
I can't envision a more surreal moment to be with Jerry that night, just hours after seeing him leave this building for the final time, and then seeing
him
there.
If he were here, he'd say I was pathetic. I was just a lump. You know, I said nothing, just awkward. But
doesn't that story sort of sum up the guy that we knew working with, and that he's able to put that aside and still be the same guy?
Yep.
The same energetic guy that was here every single morning at 5:30. That he's been told unceremoniously, we're not tendering your deal, bringing a different show. The morning show that you built. Like, is the literally that he built and the station that he helped build, you're no longer a part of it. And he's out there with Ken Laird and Jermaine Wiggins and Bob DeSalvio smoking chocolate cigars. Right. I mean, that, and he's able to do that and not let the other stuff of radio bother him. And that was one of Jerry's best qualities working with him, that there was all this stuff going around, especially on this show specifically. This show was targeted by an activist, and it led to eventually what I think happened on Friday. And he was able to deal with that and still do monster shows, monster ratings. And yes, I know it bothered him because we talked hours of conversation about it. And you guys more so than I did. But when it came time to, at 6 o'clock, flip the lights on and do a show, he did a show as well as you can do a show with literally the walls, maybe not crumbling around him, but people firing arrows into that wall. People firing at him from all different angles, from all different spots. And he gets on the air at 6 every day, does 4 hours of great radio, and then deals with the other stuff and never let it affect him on the air. That's one of his best qualities as a coworker that I saw with Jerry Callahan.
I think compartmentalize is what he did. He could easily sit in here, do a show, and during the breaks, you know, I would talk to him, or after the show, things would come up, and nobody knew how to beat a dead horse like Jerry Callahan about different things that were outside of our control. But when it came to 6 a.m., the light coming on, you know, I think back to something very benign and kind of sporty, but the first game of the Stanley Cup Final was Memorial Day, right? We start Tuesday morning show. We're sort of, you know, a little weary coming off the long weekend, you know, the late game that night before. And Jerry just opens the show and says, the series is over. And out of, like, the blink of an eye, he just creates a show like that. You just start the show.
Yeah, great radio instincts.
You know exactly what's going to elicit a response. You're going to give a, you know, bold stance, you know, in, for our world, bold stance. And there, we were off, and we were off that morning, and we were all, from that point, he set the stage. You know, the whole dumb, drunk Chris Curtis, I set the dialogue for the city. Jerry Callahan did that for 22 years. I would drive into work, into school, high school, college, back from ESPN, working overnights there. You would listen to Jerry, and the topic that he began with, the real sort of number one story that he and John led with, was what the rest of the city was talking about. Even if it wasn't really what you were interested in that day, Jerry found a way to make everybody care because he was going to have such a strong opinion and such a unique viewpoint that you were forced to respond either positively or negatively to it. And that's what was his greatest strength.
And he did that for 20 years. And I hosted a show that came on after his show with Dino and then with Dino and Kirk. And as a, forget as a listener, Chris, as someone in the business, you were listening because they were never going to miss a story. Jerry Callahan was never going to get caught flat-footed and miss a big story. Another one of his biggest strengths is you know, his preparation, which Reamer talked about extensively yesterday. But he would find that story, and you'd have to react to it as a radio host. It wasn't just a listener. You had to listen, which is a huge part of it. But as a radio host, he was setting the dialogue. By the way, for both stations, where there are two full-time sports stations,
yep.
You'd hear things on this show, 6 to 10, that were then talked about and discussed in a similar matter across the street. If people are reacting to you in the business because they feel like they respect you so much, like we've got to do that because Jerry did it, or Jerry and John and Jerry and Kirk did it, That says something about your approach to the business.
Yeah, it's, you know, not to make it about myself because Reamer and others have done that as well.
We're all going to make it about ourselves at some level today.
But just the, like, I got a glimpse of Jerry in 2001 when I interned for Dennis and Callahan. And I left for 15 years and I came back and the guy was still doing it at an unbelievable level. And during that time, you know, he was here for all 12 titles in the stretch, which is amazing. And it's kind of ironic because Jerry has a unique way of finding the negative, finding the drama, like complaining about something despite everything. So he was in that chair for all 12 titles that went by, an unbelievable run of success, which was, you know, a part of his success personally, but he still found a way to make all those compelling and find a way to get the drama out of everything.
What I think is so interesting about that, Ken, is that you have Jerry, who famously in the mid to late 90s coined the phrase Loserville.
Loserville. I remember that column in the Herald.
And, you know, that perfectly encapsulated how this city felt at that time. I remember leaving the Garden in the mid to late 90s, and people were just kicking things. They were saying, we all suck. The Celtics suck. The Red Sox suck. The Bruins suck. The Patriots are moving. Everybody was downtrodden, angry, and pissed. And here you go. The guy in the tabloid newspaper in town, welcome to Loserville. And it was just, it seems obvious. It seems kind of like, oh, that's, you know, a cliche, but he nailed it as perfectly as you can nail it at that time.
And he did that so many times because it was not forced. His natural tone was the tone of the city. A little bit on edge, a little bit, you know, angry, annoyed at the stuff that bothers everyone else, whether it's the traffic or the politics. He spoke the voice of like the listener in Massachusetts, the resident in Massachusetts. And I don't think it was something he made out thin. It was just him, his natural ability to speak to an audience and as you said, do it naturally and speak for a large group where people, whether it was Loserville, whether it was approach on a million other things, they said, this guy is speaking for me right now. That is very tough to do over a 20-year span in a market like Boston.
This is going to sound very corny, but the my way got me thinking. I mean, because he said this to me walking out. He said, I would not have changed a thing about anything that happened. And I know he believes that. But this was storybook, right? Guy from North Chelmsford, grows up here, goes to UMass.
Oh, here we go, yeah.
Career. Did it his way, right? Came in and loved what he did for 22 years at this radio station, plus all the years as a columnist and going back to the Lowell Sun. I mean, and he's not done yet. He's like guys in his late 50s. I'm sure he's going to pop up. He loves The Athletic. I'm predicting The Athletic. I think he goes there.
I think he's more of a BSJ guy.
Yeah, maybe. He and Bedard are very close friends.
And just to put a cap on that, Ken, is that so many people say that it's parochial. Anybody can succeed in their hometown. Well, he left and was a lead columnist at Sports Illustrated when Sports Illustrated was the publication in this country. And, you know, he did it nationally, he did it locally, and I just got a text from him. He said we should call our new night show Loserville. So that's nice.
Oh, by the way, we were going to play Planet Monkey later. That was Jerry's favorite thing I ever put together. So maybe we'll play that every hour.
I like it.
And I pulled Jerry's stories last night.
You have a list. You have a list of those, correct?
I have 13 Jerry stories.
Oh,
baby. Run these down real quick?
Yes.
Okay, we have the Bobby Doerr story. We have
great
the Bill
one.
Lee. Kournikova, the Kerrigan story, the Rosenhaus story, the John Hanna story.
Oh, baby. That one I think I've heard the most.
McNamara story, the Craigslist story, 6 minutes in length. The day after the Patriots won the Super Bowl, by the way, at 8 a.m. he told this story, which is unbelievable. Curtis was about to lose his mind during that. The cab driver story in Atlanta, the hitchhiker story, the Sopranos story, the Dominican sandal theft.
The best.
And the Bill Buckner, that kind of just barely made the list. But that's 13 I pulled just from last night.
I think I've heard the John Hanna story 73 times. What number did he wear? Jerry would tell me that. But I've heard that story, his uniform number, a number of times.
The best thing was when he would tell it, he'd be like, I probably have told this before, but... And he would
tell it again.
Proceed. Yeah, yeah.
Because you know what would help?
A different audience.
In the later stage of the show, obviously, with he and Kirk, there was obviously new people that were involved, that were on the casting couch. And so he would use the opportunity, I could tell... Those people might not have heard the story yet, so that was the door, that was the little crack in the door to kick it open and tell that story again, because Mark James hadn't heard the Sandal story yet, or Wiggy hadn't heard the Bill Buckner story yet.
And the one thing with the John Hanna story, that's really a Trevor Maddich story. John Hanna's the biller, you know, he's the top biller
that's
there,
true.
But the star of that story is Trevor Maddich.
He's arm-in-arm with Hanna.
Right.
Hanna led... Well, I don't want to blow the lead because nobody's heard this, so we're going to play that later.
Right, good
to I think we're going to play when we come back, correct? We're going to play one certainly at the bottom of every hour.
We want a segment, but it's up to you. That may be too much.
We can easily play one a segment.
Oh, wait.
Yes.
How do we play
one a segment?
We have to play the readings of Jerry Callahan's Thanksgiving column. We had some great people read that at some point.
That may lead to our removal from
the
station.
The entire hour.
Which may be happening anyway,
by the way. The entire 9 o'clock hour. Yeah, I mean, you guys say that we have jobs here at the station. You guys feel confident that we do? I don't. I mean, I know they said that in my conversation with
people. You have a show
at least
attached to your name. I saw on the press release Mutt at Night.
Okay,
so
we can get into
it. I didn't see Ken and Curtis mention it.
I have a
Jerry
show.
Or Jerry, the sixth paragraph. Right. That's another story.
I don't know when I'm working on the show. I don't know what the details are. I think Curtis has more of an idea than I do. I literally asked Chris yesterday before his phone cut out when he was valeting his car at Whole Foods yesterday.
Busy
the
spot.
Only radio producer in the country who's valeting his car at Whole Foods.
Hey, I had 15 minutes sleep yesterday. I was a hero, a warrior.
But I think I asked Chris, when do I get my schedule to find out when I'm working?
Glenn is thrilled that you were at nights. Did you hear that? He led the show
I've
Friday.
I've heard Glenn.
With,
I have a 15...
We need a night host. Mutt is great at night.
59-second voicemail from Glenn I've not listened to yet. I will listen to at some point.
We'll play that at 8:30.
Reached out. All right. I guess we got to take a break here. Are we still doing trending? What are we doing
now
today?
So
I will say this. We'll do this. I've heard a lot of the shows react to this the last couple of days, and they all do this for 20 minutes and say, we're not taking phone calls. Well, this morning we are. 617-779-7937. You guys know the number. There are thousands of people, tens and hundreds of thousands of people who have grown up, as Chris said, with Jerry Callahan, who went through personal issues in their life with Jerry Callahan, whose shows that he hosted with John and Kirk and whoever, helped him get through things, who listened to the show for forever, and they want to pay tribute to Jerry. We're going to take those phone calls today because we're going to speak about Jerry really all morning long, about what he meant to us, what he meant to the radio station, and a lot more. And in this show, we are taking phone calls, 617-779-7937. Those phone calls, Jerry's stories, thoughts on this show and how we got to where we got to on Friday morning. I know my thoughts, you guys probably do as well. And a lot more. It is Mutt, Ken, and Chris here on WEEI.
But first, we trend.
The home of the best off-season Patriots coverage. Boston Sports Station. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Thank you, Dale. It's brought to you by 495 Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Have you been waiting for huge savings on your next truck? Well, the wait is over. Stop into 495 Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram to get the truck you want at the discount you've been waiting for.
All right, quick question. So this went down behind the scenes. Curtis and I were, I think from the first talk of this happening, the three of us do a show together and recognize Jerry. Curtis and I were on board. Ken was very hesitant. 30 minutes in, do we make the right call, Ken?
Oh, to do the show?
Yes.
You were cathartic for me. I don't know about anybody else.
You were wondering, could we get? Is it the right play here? So I'm asking you. 30 minutes
well,
in,
day ain't the
right
over call. Yet. 30 minutes in, yes. Okay, day ain't over yet. Put it that way. Speaking of Dale, by the way, he's on the call tonight with Joe Castiglione as the Sox and the Jays start a 4-game series at Fenway. 7:10, the first pitch on the Shaw's and Star Market WEI Red Sox Radio.
Am I on tonight? Do you know?
You are.
Mutt is on pre and post.
You are the intern for Will Fleming tonight.
Oh, excellent.
So you're on ice cream
hours,
buddy.
That's going to be a power struggle going forward.
Yep.
The Fleming v. Mutnansky power struggle. Jerry could not have been relieved of duties at a better time. He got to watch all 5 hours and 40 minutes of Red Sox baseball last night. He told me he's sleeping in Monday, not listening to this show. That's probably a lie. He said he's not sure he can sleep past 3 after 22 years.
Can I just, in honor of Jerry Callahan, Wimbledon figured out how to speed up their game, their matches, before Major League Baseball did. They finally implemented a tiebreaker in the fifth set yesterday with Djokovic and Federer.
12-12.
And baseball still can't figure out. We're playing until freaking 3 in the morning, but anyway.
Well, the Wimbledon final was 4 hours Djokovic 55 takes. Minutes, the longest in Wimbledon history, but nowhere near the 5 hours and 40 of Sox baseball. Anyway, Dodgers win it 7-4. LA takes 2 out of 3 in the series. The loss to Hector Velasquez. Jerry was also texting me that he's upset at the Sox trading Elberth Romero and Elio Prado for Andrew Castor. He loved those guys. Watched a lot of Dominican Summer League.
Well, how do you hold on?
Scouting
to rip core for a second. How do you not bunt? JBJ gets a leadoff double.
Yeah.
Marco Hernandez up. You put a runner at third, one out in the whatever inning it was.
Oh, Jerry's aroused. We got mutt talk from butt.
Terrible decision.
Mutt talk from butt.
A lot more bunt talk coming, baby.
Mutt talk from butt. There we go. Off and running.
Well, the Yankees won as well. The Sox are 2.5 back and probably 10 back of the Yankees, 2.5 back of the second wild card held by the A's. It is Mike Manansky, Chris Curtis, Ken Laird. More Jerry remembrances coming up.
Now back to Mutt, Ken, and Chris. Mike Mutnansky, Ken Laird, and Chris Curtis on Sports Radio WEEI.
The Super Bowl in 96. You've been to the Super Bowl in New Orleans?
I was there in 96.
The night before, Saturday night, you can't walk down Bourbon
Street. Where was this? Commander's Palace?
You cannot move.
Because there's cheeseheads everywhere?
No, there's people. I mean, if you've been on Bourbon Street, you can't get from one end to the other. You can't cross the street.
They played the Packers, so.
True, I was there for that. I was with Sports Illustrated, so I went to the Sports Illustrated party and brought Hanner and Smirlis and Ordway and the whole crew from the old Big Show. And we say, let's go to this bar. I forget what it is. I think it's the Irish place, Patty O'Brien's.
Oh, yeah.
I got hurt.
And it's at the other end of Bourbon Street. So we look at each other and we say, hey, we're not going to be able to go. Look at this crowd. We can't get through it. Let's just go somewhere else. He says, let's go. Hannah lead blocks for us. He was in a suit and tie and he was just feeling it. And he just starts shoving people out of his way. Boom, boom. And I'm like friggin' Tony Collins. I'm following my block. And so, by the way, it's Ordway's. And he's just boom, 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 just shoving. People turn around to like fight and they look at him. They go, sorry, sir. And he just kept boom. And we went right down the street and people just got out of the way and, went to where we were going.
The greatest thing about that is that by telling Butch and Trenny, he can literally tell them 500 times and they will act like it's the first time because there's no two people who listen less than Trenny and Butch Stern. So that was a great audience for his story.
Jerry would tell anyone willing to listen that the worst listener he worked with was Butch, that he would just look straight at him. And he said about TV guys in general, he had this pegged, whether they're prompter readers or whatever, that they just don't listen. And Butch specifically felt the wrath, whether he knew it or not, from Jerry. Jerry loved Butch, but the fact that he just wouldn't listen and really react, he'd just be on to the next thing, the next schedule, to something Jerry said, bothered the hell out of Jerry.
I'm not sure if it was that Ken, or not, but there was a show with Trenny and Butch and Jerry. We were in the auxiliary studios across the street.
Yes.
And Jerry just looked at me and you and said, they're not listening to a word I'm saying.
As Butch just kept talking right over you.
The hock-a-mock.
It was funny that the co-hosts Jerry had only a few of his mainstay co-hosts. I mean, when he first started here, it was Dino, and it was Dino for all those years. And then it was Kirk, but all these people he worked with, some that he liked, some that he didn't like. For whatever reason, he loved Mark James. And Mark, he plays that drop on his show all the time. Craziest guy I ever worked with. Butch, he was down on. Dickerson didn't go out on a great note last week for a couple of those shows. Jerry was a little down on Greg. I think just maybe an off day or two. You know how it was ebb and flow. Even with you, Mutt, you had to
do it. Even with me, definitely. But even with Mark James, there were days where, we were at a point, was it late in the fall, where we walked in off the air and said, we're just done. We can't do this anymore. This is not work.
That's true.
Both agreed. We looked at each other and said at the exact same time.
That's true.
And
Curtis told him the one day.
Yes. And then eventually, as what was happening recently with this show, that anger would go away and that person would be back, whether it was Mark James specifically. But that would happen all the time with Jerry. So
Pete Shepard was a big one with that too, where Pete would go in and out of the good graces depending on the performance he had that day. Because there are certain topics. Like when we went down to Florida this year and we had Pete in for 2 hours, I'd want him for 4 hours, you and Jerry were correct in thinking that we should have him for two. I think we were 5 minutes into it, and he's like, we got to call Reamer, get him on the line.
Because he kept name drop. We should play that at some point. That was one of my favorite moments of the nine-month pregnancy of the show, was when Shepard came on and just started name-dropping these restaurants in Fort Myers and the names of people who own them. Like, we're supposed to know these, the people in Boston give a crap about Joe's Crab Shack and who owns there. Oh, the great, great happy hour they have there.
The highlight of my vacation up until Friday morning was Pete Shepard tweeting out that Astro was heading to heaven. So I thought that was a very good work by Pete.
Well, one of Jerry's statements, repeatedly lately, was, I'm working with idiots here.
Yes.
He loved to point that out. It's kind of true. Of all his qualities, intelligence, Jerry was a super smart guy, is still a super smart guy. Talking about him like he's dead. It feels like, as he said, he's going to be listening to his own funeral today. But his intelligence, his radio intelligence, but also just, he's a smart guy. Obviously, he was not scholastically a star at UMass or anything like that, but one of the smartest guys I've ever worked with.
Yeah,
that came off on the air.
One of the sort of weird things that I would do is not weird, but I would do the rundown every day, and I would send it to Jerry, and I would always sort of laugh because I'm sending it to him, and I sort of do a quick preview before I hit send, and I'm like, Jerry's read all of these stories already. There's really no point in sending
That's
it
true.
To Jerry.
He always had a story or two I had never seen from the night before. He had a knack for being
ultra-prepared. He also loved holding that over you. Like, if you missed a story, even if it was an obscure thing, like Reamer would see some like obscure some political story. He would love it because Reamer saw. Oh no, he'd love when Reamer hadn't seen it yet, and he'd almost hold it over him. Meanwhile, the same thing happened. Like if you saw a story, he didn't. He'd read it right away. Like he had to read it like that second when you tell him about this story. If then he missed something, which happened so rarely, you can't not a high enough number to get to because he never happened to him. But when he did. You had a one on him. That was a little check mark for you when you had a story, Jerry.
In contrast to Dino, not to take a shot at John, but toward the end, it was clear he was not as prepared as he was during his prime. He would say to me, hey, what happened in this game? What happened in this moment? That was never the case.
Go back to his last week with Dino here. I was on the show at the Travelers where he said, I'm the most ill-prepared I've ever been for a show. He said that on the air to start the show because he knew... forget retirement. He was going to quit at the end of the week when Kirk came back. He'd already decided that. It was pretty clear from the Travelers show.
Right.
I've never been more ill-prepared.
See, there you go. And that you never heard that from Jerry.
Not once.
Up until his vacation, he was still coming in every set. What are we doing at 8? What are we doing here? And he didn't allow the show to become a... He didn't want it to become that boring, repetitive sports show. And that's part of his smarts. You talk about the book smarts, but it's the radio smarts.
I think the latest, greatest example of that was the Ortiz shooting, where you have constant sort of flow out of the Dominican of sort of misinformation, different stories, what's going on. And throughout that period, Jerry is on top of this story. Let's get to this angle. I've read this in the Daily Mail. Did you see this at CNN.com? Did you see this here? He was on top of... He loved everything about this job, but I think... The thing he loved the most was covering breaking news stories in real time on the radio. Those were the moments where, whether it was the Vegas shooting overnight we're in here, the bombings the car attack, I wasn't in then, but in Nice or in France, but specifically for
that
me.
That was, not to take a shot at you, Mutt, but one of your toughest shows early when you were third man in was one of those days. Was it you with Jerry Dino?
I don't think Jerry was in that.
It was
the shooting in Texas.
Oh, that's what it was.
Because, but John... there are two guys.
But it takes a while to get used to that.
You didn't need
a
third guy for that show. Okay, that day specifically, if you want to go back, and I will defend myself for a second. All they were doing was reading the news. Like, Dino specifically, all he was doing...
Now that he's got a license, he's all confident.
...was reading the news of what happened. Like, something would happen, he would update it, and Jerry would give the commentary on it. And there was very little news that day. It was probably... We probably did more of it because the show was very good at the breaking news part. There was not a necessary need for a third man that day. And so I sound, if you go back and listen to it, very repetitive. I remember being frustrated because, I wanted to say something or update something, and Dino would update something. And it's like, okay, so what's the role here? Like,
it was nice. You said, be safe out there, guys. I thought that was
not,
a really
That was
good
not that show. Put. I said that on a different show. But I know what you're talking about. And those shows, you've got to have your head on a swivel because your job is to give breaking news as it's happening and try to filter out, what is really important right now. And Jerry was the best at that.
And those were the toughest days for Curtis. When you're in that chair, Jerry always wanted the story furthered. So you'd be on the phone or you'd be running around for sound or whatever. Those were chaotic days.
It was unacceptable for him to say, what else do we have? And for me to reply, nothing. I mean, when I started April 1st, 2013, 2 weeks later was the marathon bombings. And that was baptism by fire because you're in there and Jerry is wanting the latest. And if you recall, we all recall those days, there was a ton of misinformation out there. There was a lot of stories that were ended up being false. Who did this? The manhunt. The show that it doesn't get mentioned enough about what Jerry, Kirk, and John did that day. But Friday following the bombings in April, April 19th, 2013, we were on the air live 5:30 to 10. Now, remember, Mutt thought we should go on the air early because of Jimmy Garoppolo's Instagram.
That was a big
deal. I echoed that.
You agreed, though.
I tried to pull Mutt in, yes.
So, also, you agreed too, Chris, for the record.
Okay, great. I agreed too. 5:30 to 10. the only other show we've ever done, Mutt, that we were ready to go early was the Jimmy G Instagram. We went on for the manhunt and Jimmy G Instagram almost.
He was almost getting traded. He was the future of the organization.
Right. So the morning there, the 19th, was we did not, I don't believe, take a commercial break. We had pauses for 4 to 5 minute press conferences from the governor, from other people in the state. But that was as exhilarating a show as I have ever been a part of, because Jerry is in my ear constantly. This story, did you see this from, Michelle McPhee tweeted this. Did you see this from CNN? And he's in my ear, and we're real time, because people are calling in saying, hey, did you hear this? Did you hear this? And it's, we're having to vet this information in real time. And that show was excellent, and it was Jerry Callahan at his very best.
Well, and I would just real quick, but I would bet if you ask people for their lasting Jerry memories, a lot of them would be after tragedies,
big events,
days like that, 9/11. I remember listening to Jerry and John going to work that day, and it was captivating. I mean, you couldn't take your ears off it, and they were so good at that in their prime.
Well, they had so many. You had so many guests that the following day after the bombings. I mean, you had all these people, these insiders who were immediately willing to answer the show's phone call, because the show had set the bar. The Dennis and Callahan and eventually Kirk and Callahan show set the bar for how to handle those things. And again, I'll bring it back to myself. We were the show following you guys, Lou and I. And so we'll get to this more coming up. I think we should probably do it before 7 o'clock. It's, you never wanted to disappoint Jerry. And that was working with him and on the show and also at the station. And in those shows specifically, there was nobody better than that group. And so coming on after him, you wanted to make sure you tried to do the story the same great service Jerry Callahan did it. Because they you couldn't do it quite as good, but damn it, he set a certain level where you better treat it a certain way.
If you didn't, you'd get mocked the next day, I'm quite sure.
Well, but not only that,
Curtis would be pulling the audio.
In those days, they hated our show so much. I don't think we're pulling a lot of Mutt and Maloney audio. They did not like that show.
Well, Jerry hated you guys then? I actually didn't know
Jerry
that.
Was not a fan
for
a while.
I don't think he was alone.
No, I think I think the ratings said there are a lot of people who did not like that show. But you felt like you didn't live up to the standard that he set. And that went for stories like that. That went for working with him as a co-host. Because I there was a transition for me where I could tell when I started to open up more on the show, Jerry was much different around me. Like when I started to talk about the gambling and the drinking, it was like night and day how he viewed me. And it happened for a million co-hosts. So there's the good and bad days with Tangway. When Tanger would come in and Tanger would be good and funny one day and then ill-prepared the next. And it'd be back and forth. And I had those same moments with Jerry early on until you wanted to prove to him that you could hang with him. Like that was again working with him and then working after him.
Well, I think that was going back to the breaking news situation and the marathon bombings 2 weeks into my time here. That was sort of a very early pass fail test, and we're going to get to this later on with Jerry. But I passed it, and with Jerry, your first impression is going to stick with you forever with Jerry Callahan, because if you're good to him and you do a good job and he can trust you, you are an ally for life.
Well, like I said, the reaction all weekend has been about Jerry, and many of the shows have done it. Started with Glenn at 2 o'clock on Friday, Bradford, the Sunday show. We're doing it here all morning long. In addition, we are taking your phone calls, because the people listening this morning are most likely to have grown up with Jerry, as Chris said, and been with Jerry through many of these moments the last 20 years. So we're taking your phone calls at 617-779-7937, and I want to get to that living up to Jerry's standard things. Maybe not Curtis as much, but I think Ken Laird and I fell into this. Jerry's our radio dad.
Sure.
You don't want to disappoint
him. I think listeners felt that way too, radio dad. I've seen that phrase on social media the last couple of days, more than I expected to. Grew up listening to my radio dad. By the way, Jerry texted me. He wants to break down the Cashner trade, so I'm going to do that.
Ooh,
to honor
baby.
His request at some point. I'm going to wedge it in. I know you have thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts. I mean, this is
Jerry wants bullpen thoughts too after last night.
I thought it was a big trade by the Bruins.
I thought Tony La Russa said the Sox were going to trade for bullpen help.
Well, they didn't trade for bullpen
help. Well, they technically
help.
Did because they got a fifth starter finally, so that's going to help their bullpen, theoretically, Ken.
See, this is the in-depth conversation Jerry likes, and we're going to get to that, I'm sure, later in the show.
God, I hope so, because I have so many thoughts. It is Mutt, Curtis, and Ken, WEEI.
Last night.
And it's inside and low ball four. The go-ahead run is walked in.
It was the Sox dropping their last one with the Dodgers.
The Dodgers score 3 in the 12th and beat the Red Sox 7-4.
Later this evening, the boys welcome the Jays to town. It's Sox and Jays. Pre-game 6:10, first pitch 7:10. With Joe Castiglione and Dale Arnold on the call. On the exclusive home for Red Sox baseball. WEEI. Now back to Mutt, Ken, and Chris on Sports Radio WEEI.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But the Patriots punt, 8 minutes left, 4th and 1. Next play is Bortles to Didi.
That was 61 yards. Game
61,
over.
Touchdown. Game over. 31-13. That just as I predicted.
Did you call that 31-13?
Yes, well, I don't know. A sock puppet just played some old prediction, and I said 31-13.
I think we had a special guest late in the show Friday that affected.
Why is that funny that I picked the Steelers and he picked the? Who did you have you picking?
I picked the Patriots to win and cover. I was lost.
No, but what did you just play? You played some game that he picked like last year, and played
Titans and Texans over the weekend.
He picked the Titans. I picked the Steelers. Of what game are you talking about? I mean, why was that funny?
It's a joke, Jerry. It's going back a couple years to the AFC title.
I understand. You play it all the time. But what do the Steelers have to do with it? They played the Jaguars.
It was just a joke, Jerry. We didn't get to make a pick on Friday
because we had a special guest member late in the show. It was my bad job.
Who cares?
I should have had you make
but
a
why
pick.
Is it funny that I picked the Steelers when the Patriots played the Jaguars?
I'm going to go 31-13.
Team? What team?
Steelers.
That will never not be funny.
The list of stuff that annoyed Jerry that wouldn't annoy anybody else, that is at the top of the list. He hated, I'm finding out now, Jerry voice. Hated Jerry voice, which we do... Jerry, we do that off the air more than we do on the air.
Just to put an end to that that drop. We played that out of an open. That was the final element of an open following the Patriots Steelers game, and Tom Brady called in, was on hold. So he heard the tail end of the open right before that Kirk and Jerry were going to interview him. And Jerry corrects the record to Tom Brady. He goes, "Tom, I don't know what you just heard. Sock puppet. Altered the sound. I did not pick the Steelers. I picked the Patriots. You're great."
Tom, I'll text you later. That bothered me. He couldn't understand why that was funny. Like, he can play all the sound
and
of
this
me.
Stooge, this pathetic little sock puppet.
All the sound of me sound like an idiot on the Red Sox broadcast reading scoreboard updates. Those are funny. But he didn't understand how his fake scores and the way it made him feel, that was funny to everybody not named Jerry. Just like that scoreboard is funny to everyone that's not me.
The only thing he was sensitive about. There were only a few things Jerry was sensitive about. He, you know, toughest guy in town sort of thing. But you making fun of him for the phones or the text line.
Or movie talking.
Or the Steelers pick with the movie talking.
You knew me for 4 hours on a horse. You're not going to ask about horse racing, are you?
Well, I've done better, Jerry voice.
Yeah, that's not the best one. That's pretty bad.
617-779-7937, the phone. Let's go to Tim in Westboro. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good, Tim.
Hey, I just heard the news. I just got a notification, and I'm sorry to hear it. My comment is, I didn't agree with Jerry's politics, but in the last few years, I think he's really adapted to new folks coming in, and, his sense of humor has really shown through, more and more over the years. He was very serious in the early years, right? And I think that probably anybody who knows him personally is probably like, well, he's got a super sense of humor, and no one knows it. And I think that's really kind of come through. Recently, I've always appreciated that he did his homework. Sounds like you guys did too. But so that's all I got to say. I'm sorry to hear the news, but
yeah, we all are, Tim. And he's not going out of the business. He's gonna he's not gonna be on WEEI anymore. Won't be on this show, which is too bad. But he is not. I am sure that he's not done in this business. And I will give Kirk credit. I think Kirk started to bring more the sense of humor out of Jerry. You saw Jerry with Dino. You saw Jerry with Kirk. In my opinion, as a listener and someone who worked a little bit with John and Jerry, but much more with Jerry and Kirk, Kirk did a good job, and the casting couch did a good job of getting that sense of humor more out of Jerry, I thought.
I think you're exactly right. For the first, whatever it was, 15, 16, 17 years that he worked with John, that show was a serious news sports show. It was a edgy, informative show every morning, and it was great. It was number one for a very long time. But I think with Kirk, and with the cast of characters that surrounded that show, there was a lot more levity, a lot more laughs. It was, and the thing that the reason for that is, I think, while it's odd for some people to understand that Ken and I were really good friends with Kirk and Jerry because of the beating I took and Ken took from time to time from those guys, when we were away from the show in the office during breaks, all it was laughing for 90% of the time. They were good friends, and specifically Kirk and Jerry were great friends, and that's incredibly rare in this field. You and Kirk were great friends, are great friends, I guess. Kirk and Jerry are good friends. It was very unique for this.
That's a great thing.
Right. For these people, for people in radio to work together that actually get along, and that was what caused the laughter of that show. John and Jerry were colleagues. They never hung out socially, really, outside of work.
Well, in fact, it's from the producer end of it. If you could get Jerry to laugh, that was a win for us, like behind the scenes.
It was the best.
Get Jerry to laugh.
And you were excellent.
Mostly it was mutt drops, but
that's what they are. Well, we're going to play a bunch of those on Friday. Jerry can't fake laugh. I, I can fake laugh. I can sell someone's bad joke. This is what I'm probably best at. I'm Ed McMahon of WEEI. Glenn says something kind of funny, and I...
Wait till you hear Loser Villain.
Hilarious.
A lot of laughs.
So I can do that.
Yeah, that's a good fake laugh.
He cannot fake laugh. And so when he laughs, it is genuine. Either you really made him laugh like you would, or you said something so stupid,
or we'll
so
that fell
inane.
Flat. He'll just look at you and then...
Yeah, he can't sell flat. It that way. They, no. But
Steelers game.
Let's go back to the phones.
You think that was funny?
Yeah. Was that funny? I didn't even say that score. It's not my score. Tom.
Why is it funny that I picked the Steelers when the Patriots played the Jaguars?
That's why it's funny, because the way it makes you feel. Let's go back to the phones. Greg is joining us. Greg, who many of you know from the great folks at Shea Concrete, he's actually stuck with Jerry because he's his brother-in-law. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Hello, Greg. Hey, sorry to hear about my brother-in-law. I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Are you still going to go to lunch with Jerry, Greg?
Well, you know what people are asking me now? Is Jerry going to come work for Shea Concrete?
Ooh, precast podcast. You did a great job.
Well, you've heard us talk about him. We work with Jerry. I think he'd be a hard worker for you, Greg. And I think Curtis is right. He can work for you in like a podcast sense, that precast podcast. He could be the full-time host
He's
now.
Great at audio editing.
Yeah.
I got myself a new marketing guy.
Well, you've been great, Greg. You and Jerry have made us laugh with your great commercials here, and you're going to be stuck with them going forward, just so you know. A lot more calls from Jerry now.
One thing I can say, and I think you spoke about a little bit, Mark, was when Jerry is Jerry, right? He doesn't pretend he's anybody else. He doesn't act for somebody else's feel. You know, he says what's on his mind. He's passionate. He doesn't change his attitude and talk. He's just to make people happy. He says what's on his mind. And he's very passionate about it on the radio. So
yeah,
he's going to be missed.
Yeah, Greg, you're 1,000% right. That's why people loved, capital L loved him. And to Greg's point, even something the reaction there, like annoyed, how he's annoyed he got to you playing that Steelers sound. He gets just as annoyed at stuff off the air. Like we went to the our station's golf tournament last year was at that great Mirabu spa. We went to that restaurant
at the Pine Hills.
Yeah. So we're at Pine Hills, and he gets there a little bit late, and he's looking at the dinner menu. He sees that I got like a fish sandwich. Like, I want what Mutt had. So he saw my sandwich. He could have picked anything he wanted.
Or took a bite.
He
out
saw
of your
my sandwich.
Sandwich.
We'll get to that. But he ordered it because he saw what I had. It was his decision, for the record. I didn't say, hey, get this, it's great. He just saw it and said, that looks good. I want that. 3 bites into his meal, he's looked at me, puts his... annoyed me, I should have gotten the burger. It's not my fault that you saw my sandwich and got the sandwich, and he's pissed for the next half hour, saying, a burger's never bad, I should have known it. Why did I get the fish, Mutt?
And hey, it's Jerry Callahan.
I didn't twist his arm to get the fish sandwich, but he's mad at me the way he'd be mad on the air for something.
You told him you'd be a moron if you don't get the fish sandwich, Mutt. I was sitting right there.
I did not say that at
all.
He
had such specific travel arrangement requests and like habits, it was unbelievable. Just to go on the road with him was quite the experience. Real quick, by the way, an encore speak, because Greg from Shea Concrete called. Jerry was pitching
to the
president of Encore, Bob DeSalvio, to be a greeter at the front door. He went into this. It was very funny. He was like, as we're standing up to leave dinner, he's like, yeah, you need a greeter. I could be perfect. Down this way is Rare Steakhouse. Over here is, you got boxing. It was tremendous. So he's like, he's got a sense of humor even through obviously the worst day of
walk
his
to work.
Professional career here.
My favorite time with Jerry was traveling, whether it was the spring training or the Super Bowl, because you got to see the real Jerry and, you know, all of that. And when we first got to, I think it was Houston for the Super Bowl that we covered in 2016-17.
I didn't get to go.
And we get to the airport, and I got an Uber. And the Uber takes us to the hotel. It was like a Denali. And Jerry was like a kid in a candy store. He's like, so you just hit this button, and this car comes. And he was so impressed at this Uber. He was like a kid.
Uber.
He loved it. He was like, and he loved me forever. He thought I was this like brilliant guy because I was able to get this car to this spot of the airport where we walked out, and it was waiting for us.
How about when Lucy taught him Instagram or social media or whatever, right. That video? He totally infatuated for many reasons, but couldn't comprehend the whole process of it. Jerry and technology was a whole different. That's a whole different segment.
Where do I get an Alexa? Where do I get one of those? Let me go to Amazon. Oh, Jerry. How do I know you ruined Tracy's birthday? You idiot! Why'd you talk about that? The two things you did well, you got Ubers for him and you got coffee.
Coffee every day
for 6 years. Did you get
coffee
this morning?
I have it on his desk. It's sitting there as a memorial, a tribute to the one, the only Jerry Kelce.
All right, we're going to take more calls on Jerry's. You guys, no surprise. People want to react and talk about what Jerry meant to them as listeners here throughout Boston and New England. It's 617-779-7937. And I think it's fitting that we're going to do headlines here in the segment, Jerry's favorite segment, to talk about, I think what we all agree was Jerry's best trait as a host, and that was his fearlessness. I want to talk about that and get some calls coming up. And Ken has some major Red Sox theories he wants to break down here.
We don't
want
to get to the bullpen, as Jerry
It is Mutt, Ken, and Chris, WEEI.
I'm going to go 31-13.
Team? What team?
Steelers.
25 years and counting. The number one sports station in Boston and throughout New England. Sports Radio, WEEI.